With me today is Dr. Carol Clark, CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. And this is probably, what, your third or fourth interview, I believe, that you've had with the Umbrella Hour. It's always a pleasure to have you come to our program because we learn so much. We, meaning the audience, will learn so much. And I also, actually, even though I'm a graduate of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, I too always learn something each and every time.
Thank you.
Why would someone want to attend the International Institute of Clinical Sexology? And just so that everybody knows, we often refer to this as IICS.
Yeah, well, that makes it easier.
Yes.
Well, thank you for having me. I love being on your podcast and talking with you, Dr. Goldbauer. It's an honor for you to invite me here.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, so you're asking, why would anyone want to take this program? Why would anyone want to be a sex therapist? Why would anyone want a PhD in clinical sexology? So maybe I'll tell you my story, what brought me to it, and then I can tell you why some other people as well might have come to this. But for me, I got my master's degree in mental health counseling a little bit later in life. I was in my 30s. And the thought of going on and getting a PhD in psychology was just overwhelming. And so, no, it's time for me to get on with my career, get on with my life, my professional life. I was done with school. Let's do it. I came to Florida from New Jersey, and Florida has a requirement that you needed to take a human sexuality class in order to get licensed as a mental health counselor. So this was in 1991. I took a human sexuality class with Dr. Marilyn Volker, who later became my mentor and then a dear friend, and then was on my board, one of my faculty. And she so inspired me in the field of sexology, so many things about sex, which is so much a part of everyone's lives. And of course, the one basic thing is, how do you be any kind of counselor, social worker, marriage and family therapist without having knowledge of sexology and sex therapy? Here we are practicing even with one course. It's not enough. Sex permeates all areas of people's lives. And then I realized as well that to really put me ahead in my career, I did need to have a specialty. Otherwise, I'm just one of many, many, many mental health counselors. So I realized, oh, I can be a sex therapist and get certified in this. And that would give me something to hang my hat on, a specialty, something that's fascinating, really interesting. And so then the universe opened that path to me. And after I finished that one course and I got licensed, then I got something in the mail that said, here's a program where you can get certified as a sex therapist. And I said, oh, here we are. This is it. So I took that program. And towards the end of that program, the owner of the program, instructor, said he had an agreement with the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sex Sexuality out in California. And those of us who had taken the certification, if we wanted to go on for the PhD in human sexuality, then everything that we had done would count towards that. And the cost was much less than a psychology degree. The work, I'd already done some of the work. The rest of the work was really totally doable. And I would have to do a dissertation because that's really what a PhD is all about. And so I did it and I went for it. And then I have a doctorate in human sexuality. And so then I was working in the field and I got into teaching at the university locally. And again, the universe just kept bringing me these opportunities. And I started teaching. And then one day, one of my students said, hey, Dr. Clark, if we want to be certified, why don't you start a certification program? I said, oh, okay. And I did it. So I started a certification in addictions, one in sexology, sex therapy. And then as time was going by, I'd always been really interested in transgender people. That was another part of that first human sexuality class with Dr. Volker. And so I had made trans people my special area of focus underneath the broader sex therapy umbrella. So I started working with trans people forever and ever. And I realized I was getting calls from people around the world, certainly all around the United States, because there just weren't enough therapists that had any knowledge, awareness, expertise of what this was all about. And so then I said, well, I need to educate more people, more therapists. So I started that certification. And then time went on and I thought, I have all these certification programs. and the big sex therapy program, I will blend them into one and offer a PhD. So that's what I did for my personal journey. I became a sex therapist. I became a transgender specialist. Also, I'm an addictions specialist. And then I have the PhD. It's become my brand, being Dr. Carol Clark. That's my brand. That's my cachet. That's my validity. When you're talking about sex, it really helps to have a doctor in front of your name. And it's exciting. And with all of that, let's face it, at the end of the day, you're going to make more money. It monetizes like nobody's business. Any other PhD, even in a PhD in psychology, unless you're doing forensic work, will not monetize the way this degree does. So having the certification and then having the doctorate to make you even more marketable, it monetizes.
You've also had doctors attend who wanted to know more about sex therapy and just sexual health in general. Because I think the average doc, when they are studying anything to do with sexual health, it's usually STDs or HIV. It doesn't really go beyond that, where they are comfortable having conversations with their patients.
Absolutely. So there are people in other healthcare fields than therapy, including coaches. So coaches, doctors, physicians, nurse practitioners, nurses have taken this program. A pelvic floor physiologist took the program so that they can expand their practice and really help their patients. Because otherwise, these other professionals are confined by just this narrow thing of what they do. And when you have a gynecologist or a urologist, for instance, who has somebody come in and say, "Hey, I have erectile problems," or "I have pain when I have intercourse," or "I haven't been able to have orgasms. I'm a woman, I've never had an orgasm." And the gynecologist or urologist, for instance, all they can do is say, "Well, there's nothing physically wrong. I can't find a medical reason for this, so I have to send you somewhere." And quite often, they don't know where to send them, so they don't send them anywhere. So one thing I tell my therapist to do is market yourself to physicians so that they have some place to send these people to. But the other thing is, if you're a physician and you'd like to be able to help your patients in a broader way, you can help with some basic information, what we call limited information and specific suggestions on a broader scale. That doesn't necessarily have to mean you're doing deep therapy. It just means that you can help them in a way that goes beyond medicine.
I love that implicit. For me personally, because I'm not a licensed therapist, I am able to have conversations with people. And I have found that even just in circles of conversation, I've applied that implicit. It really does rescue people. I think it gives them a little bit of information, as it states, but it also gives them that time away from focusing on things that aren't going to be helpful to them. And it shifts that focus to them, whether it's an individual or a couple, so that they can work together on something that's doable in that time frame, opposed to over long term.
Yeah, so that's what we call it, the plicit. And we didn't explain that to the audience, but the plicit is the original, one of the original sex therapy tools developed by Jack Annan. And the plicit is P for permission, means in various ways, I give you permission to talk about whatever you need to talk about with me. I can handle it. I'm the right person. You can trust me with this. The LI is the limited information, SS specific suggestion. And the IT is intensive therapy, which originally Jack Annan said most people don't need. Now, as a therapist, I certainly do deeper therapy with a lot of people, but the LISS part of that is something that anyone can do. All our non-therapists can just give that limited information. If you say, "I have a problem having an orgasm," you can ask another question or two. And then an example of limited information would be most women need direct stimulation of the clitoris in order to have an orgasm. And so the specific suggestion would be change positions and don't have the expectation that you're going to have an orgasm through penile vaginal intercourse. Play around with different positions, find other ways. Here are some other ways to stimulate your clitoris while you're having intercourse or while you're having other sex play. And there you go. And now you've just changed somebody's life. That took less than a minute. And so anybody can do that. Our medical people, coaches, everybody.
When you speak with students, now I do have to just pipe in here that I've taken your classes and I want to do another round of them because I enjoy the way you teach.
Oh, thank you.
I do. It's not robotic. Your style that a lot of people take to because it's very natural. You're down to earth. You state it for what it is and you keep it pleasant and personal. In a lot of cases, adult learning can become mundane. Your classes are never mundane.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You touched my heart. That's what I'm going for. So when I hear that I'm achieving my goal, that just warms me to no end.
And I've taken your addiction classes. I thought when I first took addiction classes, I thought, I'm not going to like this. I said that because I had battled with some addiction in previous times. For purposes of this show, it's no different, I suppose, than anyone who's trying to cope or disconnecting or whatever it is that we do. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it, but I fell in love with it. And I'll tell you why. It made sense to me. Everything that you talked about made sense to me. And I have not shied away from it. I've enjoyed it. I find myself talking with other people about it. And I recently was on Zoom with my granddaughter, who is now living in Germany. She's always very patient with me, and I had the opportunity to talk with her about how people use substances and why they use substances. It was a really pleasant conversation. It was easy to have with her. And I credit you for that.
Thank you.
It's not an easy class. It's a class that helps people bridge the experiences in a non-judgmental way so that people understand what happens to our amygdalas, why we do what we do. And you get into that discussion beautifully. So I want you to talk just very briefly about that.
I also had an aversion to going down the path of studying addiction, teaching addiction, being an addiction counselor. That was not what I was going to do because my father was an addict. He was an alcoholic and it really interfered with our relationship. And then I had a really significant relationship, romantic relationship for the early years of my 20s with someone who was not only an alcoholic, but a drug addict. And then I realized he's a sex addict. And so when I went to school again in my early 30s, the last thing I wanted to do was study addiction. They even offered us the opportunity to take some addiction courses and come away with a certification in addiction. And I said, no, no way. I want nothing to do with it. Well, the universe had other plans for me. And it happened. My father went into recovery. My old boyfriend called me up and made an amends that was incredibly powerful. And then I came to Florida and I found one job that I had for almost a year. It was a really good job. And then I went into another job for another couple of years, I guess. And then that job ended and I was without work. And after 3 months, the only job I could get was at an addictions treatment program, substance abuse program. And it's just like, okay, they hired me without having any credentials or anything. I was a mental health counselor. I started working with addicts. Okay, I can do this and this is fine. And then just opportunities were popping up. And then one of those opportunities required me to have a certification in addiction. So I took the extra classes finally to get that certification. And then I realized as I was working with sex offenders, actually, one of my sex offenders came to me one day and said, I think I'm a sex addict. And this was in the late 90s. This was a new thing. This idea of sex addiction. I said, huh, well, let's look at that. And so gradually I started working with sex addicts. And then I just morphed into the premise that addiction goes beyond any drug or behavior. It's really about stimulation and high levels of stimulation that provide not only pleasure, but escape, escape from the existential emptiness that we develop as children when we take in the messages that I'm not good enough, I'm not important, I'm worthless, I'm not lovable. And these happen through big T traumas like sex abuse or physical abuse, or the small T traumas like a parent chastising a child for not getting an A on a report card. And just having that general attitude that you have to do better, you have to be perfect. And basically giving the message that my love for you is conditional. Therefore, you're not important, you're worthless, you're not lovable unless you do what I want you to do. And then, of course, that extends to people, LGBTQ people, who get the message that because you're trans or you're gay, that my love for you is conditional, and therefore you're worthless, etc. So I was putting all of this together over the years and realizing that addiction isn't about any one thing. It's just this global concept. And so then I wrote my first book, Addict America, The Lost Connection, because that's what it's really about. Addicts disconnect intimately. They lose that intimate connection with themselves, with each other, with other people, with the universe, the higher power. And then that loss of connection is what drives the addiction. And it has to be healed before you can recover, fully recover from addiction. There's plenty of people out there who abstain from their drug of choice, for instance, alcohol. They abstain from one thing, but they're still behaving addictively in so many other ways that still keeps them disconnected. And then that led to my writing my second book, My Pocket Therapist, 12 Tools for Living in Connection, which is just putting together all the exercises that I've given my clients over the years. I'd say, write this down, write this down, write this down. Well, I finally wrote it down. Now I just give them the book. That's how addiction has really become just everything I talk about, everything in my life. And so even when I'm teaching about sex, I don't talk about sex addiction per se, but I talk about that addictive process that gets in the way of intimate relationships. So you can't disconnect that from sex therapy. You have to look at it even to the point of stress and anger. Those are very stimulating. Those are disconnecting. And when we apply a recovering exercise format intervention to everyone with everything, it works. It just works. The Serenity Prayer works for everyone. The 12 steps work for everyone. The living in recovery just works for everyone who wants to live in connection.
What I think really hit home for me was your explanation about what addiction looks like, what it sounds like. I've had discussions with other people about your book, Addict America. Some of the feedback I've received, first of all, they loved the book, but some struggled with this idea that how is it possible that if they're not attached to a substance, that everyone is assumed to be an addict of some sort? And I want you to explain that, because we all are addicts of something. My running, I love running. I ran for years until I had a moment of interruption. It was my go-to. Most people would have said, and maybe they did behind my back, I don't know, who runs 7 miles a day? Well, I ran 7 miles a day. It did wonders for my brain. It did wonders for my body, and I loved it. I now walk. But we are, I think, all addicts of some sort.
Yeah. Okay, so let's break that down. Not about being addicted to something, like you're talking about running. And from the way you just described your running, I don't think that was an addiction for you. That was something that you did that made you feel good. When you couldn't do it, okay, you felt depressed, but it wasn't like, it just doesn't feel like addiction. Addiction, the simple definition, is obsessive, compulsive, out of control behavior done in spite of negative consequences to self or others. And when anything falls into that definition, then I will say that's addiction. And so it could be our phones, it can be listening to the news, it can be just living in fear these days, it can be being angry, being stressed. Here's the thing about stress. Whenever somebody says, oh, I'm so stressed, I just have to have a drink, I just have to go look at some porn, I just have to go shopping therapy. You're an addict. And here's the thing, you're creating your own stress. And here's something that I try to teach therapists, myself included back years ago, get into this trap of, oh, somebody comes to us, they say, oh, I'm so stressed. Then we say, well, let's practice relaxation techniques. Let's practice breathing. Let's do some cognitive behavioral work, a little bit of that. And that actually gets more to it, but it doesn't really get to the heart of it, changing your thinking just on the face of it. What happens is when we're in that addict state, so whether you call yourself a full-blown addict or not, when you're in an addict state, then you create the stress that is stimulating. And so that feeds the addict brain. And then you set yourself up to act out. So if my drug of choice is alcohol or cocaine or porn or shopping or gambling, and I get all stressed and now I just have to go do this thing. Okay, what I've done is I've created the stress. So it's a circle. It's not linear. And so I never tell anyone anymore, oh, just breathe, just go do some relaxation stuff, do some yoga, because that's not getting to what is the problem. Those things will help once you admit my problem is I'm an addict. And I'm creating my own stress. So let's look at that. And that's where the serenity prayer is so perfect. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, which is going to be whatever is causing you the stress. The courage to change the things I can, that's me, to admit I have a problem. And say, I need to change. I need to change my response to everything around me.
We will be taking our first commercial break to play the commercial from our sponsor, the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. We hope that you're enjoying this hour so far. You are listening to Dr. Carol Clark, who is the founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, also known by its acronym IICS. You can check out Clinical Sexology Program at www.clinicalsexologyphd.org. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and our guest, Dr. Carol Clark. Let's get back to the show.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, which is going to be whatever is causing you the stress. The courage to change the things I can, that's me, to admit I have a problem and say, I need to change. I need to change my response to everything around me. And the wisdom to know the difference. And we can really embrace that and own it and be responsible for our behavior and our stress. Then we can use the tools for recovery, because we still have to lower our brain baseline, which is the need for stimulation. So we all have a baseline in our brains that we're born with. And then simple pleasures, good food, an orgasm, gives us a little bit of a lift. Ah, that was nice. And then we come back to the baseline. And things that cause us sadness or whatever, they give us a little dip from the baseline, and then we come back to baseline. When we do something that's really intense, that causes an intense burst of stimulation, which leads to a burst of dopamine, the brain starts to readjust the baseline, because that's not natural. And that part of the brain is 5 million years old, give or take. And so it's not going to change. It doesn't adapt to today's world. What it does, it says, oh, this isn't natural. We need to reset. And so the brain keeps resetting to need more and more stimulation just to feel normal. And that's where that stress comes in too. The stress helps us just feel normal. And then we need more stimulation to get the hit. When we go into recovery, we need to just remove all the extra stimulating stuff in our lives to allow the brain baseline to start lessening, to reduce. And eventually it'll never go back to normal. It'll never go back to what it was originally, but it'll go pretty darn low to where simple pleasures will once again be pleasurable and not boring.
You really do provide an amazing overview. I hope whoever is listening to you will have an interest in perhaps considering addiction as one of their focus points, because we certainly in today's world, we absolutely could use more therapists and doctors who are really in tune with the problems that we are seeing, particularly. It's not just really even with young people anymore.
Oh, no. It permeates everything. And we're seeing it in our culture, in our politics. When we say, why is this person doing something so irrational? Follow that why back to the limbic system, that primitive 5 million year old brain, to either survival or addiction. And then the behavior makes sense, but you can't reason it out. So when we say, why does Jeff Bezos need, or Elon Musk or these other ones, why do they need more billions of dollars when people are starving and don't have health care and all this other stuff? Why do they need? Well, why? I don't know those men, but that's addictive behavior. They need more and more and more, and they lose touch with all sense of reality.
I'm so glad you said that.
All the politicians, when you look at these politicians, and it's like, why do they sell their souls? Why do politicians that get into office because they're millionaires and billionaires in their own right, and they gain an office where they could do so much good, so much good. As long as I'm dropping names, I'll throw out Rick Scott here in Florida. He became governor. He was a billionaire. He became a governor. There was so much good he could have done. And instead, he kept selling out to the big companies, big interests. And so you say, why? You follow it back to the limbic system, survival and addiction. And if it's not addiction, there's also, I'll call it out again, I don't know these men, I'm just looking at behavior, but there's the survival part of needing our parents to care for us, to love us. And when you get people, and I have read Mary Trump's book about Donald, and I could have written it myself probably just based on behavior, but you have somebody that their father, you look at these powerful men who had fathers that were cold, withholding their affection, their love, gave only conditional attention, not even love. And you're going to get somebody whose survival brain says, but I need this person to take care of me. And when they don't get it, they keep chasing that all their lives.
Yeah.
So that's just me. I hope. I just, you know, I'd love to do therapy with any of those people. That's the other thing about wealth, is it insulates you from needing to finally do anything about yourself. So
right.
Anyone listening to this, and if you're in a position yourself where you're saying, wow, I either want to help people, or maybe I need help, maybe I need to look at myself, then you are already so much more evolved as a human being. And I have the utmost admiration for any addict in recovery. And so that means anybody, any of us that live a recovering life. And I've just had the utmost honor and respect and reverence for people people living in recovery. They've done the hardest work a person can do. And they've had to make decisions about what is life all about? What's the meaning of life? And what do I want my life to mean? And it's not about money or power. It's about just being connected.
I think there is something to be said about lived experience. I went through a period where I thought it was overused, but it can't be used enough, because when someone has that experience, they're speaking from a different platform. Not saying that someone who is trained to work with individuals from all different walks of life and all different situations doesn't matter. Not at all. I'm not saying they can't be effective. I'm not saying any of that. But I do think there is a difference with someone who has had that experience, who in turn helps somebody else. And when you mention the Serenity Prayer, isn't that really what that is? It's turning around and reaching out to someone who can be reminded that you can only be in control of yourself when you permit yourself to be in control, giving yourself the opportunity to do so in a healthy way. Everything else is external.
Dr. Janice Rosler and I came up with the term externalized emotional reliance to go beyond codependence, which has become outdated and controversial term. So we went beyond that with externalized emotional reliance, and it's the same coin, but two sides of it. Addiction is reaching for a drug, reaching for a specific behavior to feel better about oneself. Externalized emotional reliance, EER, is about trying to control other people. And it could be trying to control one person, like your partner, in order to feel better about yourself, relieve the anxiety. It's the same existential pain that I'm going to be abandoned. If I don't control this person and they get mad, if I don't make them happy, or if I make them angry, then they're going to leave me. So there's that fear of abandonment. Again, survival brain stuff. So I'm trying to control them. And then there's also like being on social media, and I need to get so many likes in order to feel important, feel validated. So that's another expression of EER. And, you know, again, recovery and it's just being good with yourself. I don't need to worry about making you angry. If I say something to you and you get angry, that's on you. I can certainly check myself, take responsibility and what's going on for me. I get angry. If you push one of my buttons, I need to take responsibility for that button. And if I push your buttons, then I can certainly look at what motivated me. But you know, I'm a nice person. I don't want to make anyone angry or anything. I don't have that power, but I certainly wouldn't want to do that. So if there's something I can do to modify my behavior, okay. But that would be out of consideration for you, not because of fear that you're going to not like me.
Right.
And so it's important for everybody to recognize that when they're with other people, that they're constantly walking on eggshells. Anyone out there listening to this, if you're walking on eggshells anywhere, at any time, with anyone, you need to check yourself. What's that all about? Because the bottom line is you cannot control anyone else. You just don't have that power. So if somebody gets angry or somebody gets sad, that's for them to figure out what's pushing their buttons and then get therapy for it.
The international world that we live in, that we operate in at school, is a wonderful world. I've met so many wonderful people mm-hmm. all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
What is in it for someone living in another country to sign on to the International Institute of Clinical Sexology in Miami Shores, Florida? What's in it for somebody?
You know, so again, it comes down to helping people. If you're in the helping profession, then you recognize that sex permeates all parts of our lives, even if you're not having sex. I mean, that affects us. Understanding all the things that affect our sex lives. One of the things I look at as a sex therapist is my job is to remove barriers to optimal sex, remove barriers to connection. That's what I'm doing. And so wherever you are in the world, we're still human beings. And that's what you're going to learn with us. That's what I teach. I try to teach in a very practical way. I give people useful information, not just stuff from books that, when I got out of grad school, it's like, huh, what did I learn? So I try to teach in a very practical way. And then one of the things we're heavy on is the cultural influences that are barriers to good intimacy. And so it's wonderful having an international community in our school where we can hear from people in other countries, what are their cultural practices, the religious practices, and what enhances sexuality, and then what is a barrier to good sex. People around the world have the opportunity to learn that with us. And unfortunately, in a lot of places around the world, they don't talk about it at all. They talk about it less than we do in the U.S. Although I have to say, some places in the U.S. are very repressive when it comes to talking about sex, and then other places are more liberal and open. We have a little bit of everything. Wherever you are in the world, you're going to learn something in our school, and we try to respect all cultures and all people. There's just not that many schools that do what we do.
Yeah, that is so true. Do you know how many are in Florida? Three?
Oh, for sure. There's a third that we're not sure if they're, I go to their website once in a while. I don't think they're really, I'm not sure if they're viable anymore, if they're doing anything. So there's definitely two. And then in the country, there's a couple more. There's a few that do the certification. There's only a couple more that offer a PhD in clinical sexology.
Yeah, not many.
And around the world, there's a couple here and there. When I think that, wow, I created this program that's one of so few in the world, it's like, whoa, yay me. But I didn't do it alone, that's for sure. I did it with the help of so many people, like including you, Dr. Goldbauer. You know, I mean, my staff, my faculty are just amazing. I've been so blessed.
I feel blessed because it's given me an opportunity, and I've met wonderful people, including faculty, and I've had the joy of learning. Every time one of my students is working on their doctorate, I'm amazed at how much I learn. The subject matters alone are so fascinating. Things I don't even think of. I had one student who studied Furbies.
Oh, yeah, the Furbies.
And I thought, Furbies. I'll have to look that one up now. But I learned more from her than I probably otherwise would never have even considered. Well, maybe if perhaps one of my grandchildren mentioned them, I wouldn't have known. And I don't even know if my grandchildren are aware of Furbies.
Well, you know, that's something you're bringing up, something I like to say a lot, which is you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
So there's people around the world, there's people in this country that might think, they might say, hey, I know enough about sex. I can be, I'm a sex therapist even, and I can do this. But you don't know what you don't know. And so one of the things that we try to do in this program is open you up to all the things you don't know. And then teach you something about them. And then we have the individual certifications that allow you to take a deep dive into different areas. So like our gender program, when I teach the gender identity in the sex therapy part of the program, it's just opening you up to what you don't know. And then if you really want to work with gender transitioning people and gender incongruence and gender in general, then you really need to take the specialty, which is the specialty certification.
Yes. And I had the opportunity to do just that. So my body of work encompassed that. But the focus, of course, was human trafficking, because unfortunately, while it permeates every class and every economic background out there and every race and religion, it also has a role within the vulnerable communities as we know them, the LGBTQIA plus never ending acronym, as I say, community.
Yeah. Gross.
Yeah, that was my focus. And I was very grateful to be able to do that. And since then have published twice and hope to continue. But I wanted to also mention that I had some students who came from backgrounds. I think one was initially a Muslim and then turned to the Pentecostal church and went on to work with her community to help them develop healthy sexual outlook and to minimize fear that often would result in attitudes and bias. It's just amazing to me, the work that can be done with people. And I think another piece of that, because I am a nurse, I think of people who have lost limbs or perhaps they were diagnosed with cancer, how it is such an important area to be able to discuss sexual health and to help them regain their intimacy with their partners and feel good about who they are, because It requires us to recalibrate ourselves when we encounter disease and loss. And how do you do that? And you do that when you meet sex therapists who can work with people to gain or regain their intimacy with their partners. And I think that's so important, particularly in the areas where there is perhaps the loss that people encounter because of disease or maybe war zones that they returned from. We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and our guest, Dr. Carol Clark, who is the founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, also known as IICS. We hope that you are enjoying this conversation and learning much about IICS. If you are thinking about taking some courses or working towards your PhD, your doctorate, please listen to the commercial. IICS has so generously offered to be our sponsor this hour. Stay tuned, don't go away, we'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden. Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On, and our guest this hour is Dr. Carol Clark from IICS, the acronym that stands for the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Let's get back to the show.
Well, people can experience sexuality no matter what's happened to them. Even someone who's a quadriplegic still has parts of their body that are sensitive to touch. And the biggest sex organ is the brain. So there can be intimacy and there can even be some sexual feelings that don't involve genitals. And these are some of the things that they do talk about in the sexuality and disabilities course, that specialty. One of the things I also want to mention, since you brought up that, is a lot of people out there all around the world might say, well, nobody around me in my community, I've been a therapist for a long time, nobody's ever come in with this particular problem. Well, that's because you're not a specialist in it. That's not your expertise. So when you work with disabilities, when you work with kink, BDSM, when you work with sex addiction, then you market yourself. You get that out there, and then the people will call you. They're not going to call other people because they don't want to risk being shamed. Gender, the transgender, same thing. A trans person isn't just going to pick up the phone and call any old therapist. They're going to look for somebody that works with trans people. And so all of these specialties we offer allow you to be in that position where you will get the business because the people will come to you because they see that that's what you do. Whereas personally, I don't work with BDSM just for no other reason than I'm not an expert in it. And so nobody's calling me about that. Nobody ever calls me about that. But if I were to put out there that I work with BDSM, I guarantee you my phone would be ringing. So I get the calls for the trans people and the sex addicts. Other people get the calls for the disabilities and BDSM. And so that's another benefit to doing any of these programs.
Yes, and you also offer the sex offending program.
We do. Yeah.
And
We have the sex offender program, which is every state. I can't speak to other countries, but certainly every state has requirements to treat sex offenders. And I mean, sex offenders don't just walk in your door. They are mandated by the court. And so there's restrictions on who can treat them. Our program pretty much fulfills all the requirements for the different states. The only requirements we don't entirely fill might be supervision. So like here in Florida, Florida is one of the toughest states. You need 2,000 hours of supervised work experience. We provide 50 of those hours. But the woman that teaches that program does have contracts in Florida, and she takes on a lot of our students, and they can work under her to get all their hours eventually. But other states don't have those restrictions. And the other thing about sex offenders, for those who have not actually offended, there's what we call non-offending pedophiles or MAPs, minor attracted persons. And that's another new area for people who have been trained in treating sex offenders to work in, where the person has not yet offended, and we don't want them to. We want to help them not offend. And traditionally, therapists everywhere are scared to death when somebody walks in their office and says, "Hey, I'm attracted to children." The therapists are like, freaks out, or, "I can't see you." Or those people never approach a therapist. But now it's out there. We have what there's websites supporting these people, and there's therapists now who are trained and work with MAPs and non-offending pedophiles for that purpose, to keep them from ever hurting a child.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All about prevention.
Yeah, seriously.
I wanted to also touch on the hypnosis.
Yeah, so that program is the first 5 days is teaching the basic hypnosis skills. And then at the end of those 5 days, you can be certified by the National Board of Hypnotists. And then the second 5 days, which are 1 day a month, focus specifically on using hypnotherapy to help people with sexual dysfunctions and disorders. And since I do EMDR and I don't see that many clients anymore, so I personally have not taken that program.
What about the master's program?
The master's program, I'm waiting for the people that are doing it. The ball's in their court now. We've got all the approvals. So we have a master's in sex coaching, and that's going to include a business component to teach people how to manage the business part of marketing and running the business of coaching or therapy. It'll be good for any of our therapists as well. But the bulk of it will be the sex coaching.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to share?
I might as well give a plug for my other book, my third book, Why Does God Let This Happen? The Meaning of Life. And I'm 73. Just through my life, I've just had these awarenesses and awakenings and messages from the universe and all, putting things together. And I came up with the meaning of life. Why does God let this happen? Which is a question everybody's asking and is always asked. And we're all asking it now. And when we see all the horrors around us every day, I go to my book as well. It's very short, very simple. It's on Amazon. And it also has a fun little piece where I compare Genesis, the book of Genesis, to the Big Bang Theory, to just demonstrate that science and religion are not mutually exclusive. They're, in fact, they interweave perfectly. And then why does God let this happen? So, sorry, you're gonna have to get the book to find out. the answer. I think of it every day. I use those principles every day when I start to get overwhelmed, when I start to just lose hope, and it just helps me stay in recovery. I've never been super addicted to anything, but I recognize when I'm in an addictive state and I choose to live in a recovering state. I try to. And that little book, just when I remember to think of it, to refer to it, that helps. So that's the final thing. It's about me. If you want to know more about me, go to my YouTube channel, Dr. Carol Clark on YouTube. And there's articles on my website, drcarolclark.com, things that I write about. So all my experience, knowledge, whatever wisdom I've gained over the last 7 decades, I just put out there for to pay it forward. So that doesn't die with me. Although all of it is really channeled through the universe anyway. So I just package things a little differently. That's what everybody does. It's all the same basic wisdom and knowledge. And then we just all package it differently.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We hope that you enjoyed this hour and that you learned quite a bit about the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Until next time, thank you for listening.